welcome to the Smoke Break. I'm your host, your old pal Zane, here with Zoe Schwartz.
Hello. Sometimes I want to play air guitar when that goes on.
And Lori Van Diemen.
I totally understand that feeling.
Awesome. Awesome. As somebody who used to have a lip ring but might have swallowed it before this, I really like guitar.
I didn't notice it was gone.
Yeah. It feels uncomfortable. Real quick disclaimer. This is for entertainment purposes only. We work in the field of mental health but do not claim to be professionals in this space. Our intention is to have conversations around lived experience, and as a result, we may not always agree with everything our guests say, but we do intend to hold space for open conversations and learning from one another. Lori, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, comedian, yeah. Librarian, all the cool things.
Oh yeah, are those all the cool things?
I mean, honestly, in my book, yeah. That's a bad pun. Anyways,
I didn't even realize. Oh, I'll keep going with this. Oh, yes. God.
Oh, I'm sure you've heard them all. This week we wanted to talk about perfectionism.
Yes,
is that something you can relate with a little bit?
Oh yes, I have material about it. Perfectionism snuck up on me because I thought a perfectionist was like someone who listened to everything Oprah said, someone who does everything Oprah says, like, and a perfect person. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, I'm not any of that. But what I did notice, and what many therapists finally pointed out to me, is the perfectionism is the paralysis that keeps me from trying anything.
Like, yeah.
Like seeing someone who's really good at what they do and being like, well, I'm not going to bother, you know?
Yeah. Well, and I think comparison is kind of like a tricky thing, you know, because like you're going to see people who do things better. And if you judge yourself based off of whether or not you're as good as them, you're not going to feel like you're good enough.
Yeah. Well, and it also sucks the joy out of everything because while you're trying something, you're just thinking about, I'm not doing this as well as I think I should be. Mm-hmm. And therefore, why am I bothering?
Yeah.
Why should, like I can't just enjoy a hobby. I have to be the best at
it. Yeah, yeah. It does take a lot of joy away from things when you think that way.
Oh, yeah.
So it's almost like the ideal of the thing needing to be perfect prevents you from even starting to work on it.
Right.
Because you're like, well, there's no way. Like, I can't do that. So, yeah.
Exactly. And I think, like, a lot of comedians get this feeling. Like, when you see someone do a great set and you're like... Why do I bother? Yeah.
That couldn't be me.
Comedy's done. Yeah. They did it.
Yeah.
I'm out.
Well, I'll just sign off on their note. Well, I mean, I think for me, perfectionism is it's a slippery slope because there's all these things that I want to do, but because I want to do so many things, I'm not going to be perfect at all of them. But like, I want to show up perfectly to all of them. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of times I end up not showing up because it's easier than feeling like you fell short.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No. Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, I can relate to that. Yeah. I think it does. It takes a lot of joy away from like, well, also I think it's this false idea that there's like one way to do things. Right?
Sure.
Or that like a perfect version of things is even really achievable, you know, because you could always find something wrong with something, and it prevents you from like actually getting better, which is kind of ironic, right?
God. Yeah. That's the worst part of it. It's so crippling.
Yeah.
You know, and I think one of the tricks, one of my therapists used with me, she's like, because I'm very confident in my work life.
Okay.
And so she's like, just take some, like, borrow that energy from a place where you do feel good about what you
do. I like that.
That's a good advice.
And just walk into your new thing with that.
Mm-hmm.
And that has helped a lot.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? Why do you think that specifically has helped more than some other stuff?
That's such a, it's a good question. And I haven't totally figured it out.
Yeah,
I think it's just, at work, you know, I manage people, and so I like see a lot of they have a lot of the same insecurities I do, but I can see it externalizes the problem because they're like, oh, I'm afraid to start this new part of this task because I've never done it, and what if I fuck it up? And it's like, as their boss, I can be, it doesn't matter if you fuck it up, like, then you'll try it again, it'll be fine, and in the meantime you're getting paid to do this, so why not just try it?
Sounds like a cool ass boss.
I was gonna say, sounds like you're good at it.
I'm gonna go work at a library.
I will let you know when I'm hiring.
Perfect oh no, what have I done? Well, I think the idea of like taking confidence that you have in a different area and kind of like transitioning it to other places, because there are going to be things that you're more confident in, you know, but like I think just knowing that you can be really good at something should give you a little bit more confidence in that, like, maybe you can be really good at something else.
Yeah. Do you think it, I mean, I guess it comes from like, I'm assuming it comes from like comparing yourself to other people, but have you ever used the strategy of like, you know, like competing against yourself in the sense of like, I just need to want to be better than I was last time? Like, does that ever help?
Not for me.
No.
No. Yeah. I think And maybe it's maybe I also haven't tried it because I'm like, well, which part of myself is so good that I'm going to like fight her?
I don't know.
Like, I don't know. Like I used to run track, but I was so bad at it that I'm like, I'm not going to go against like I could do my like my 400 1 second faster than before, but I'm still behind every other varsity runner. So who cares?
Yeah.
But is that something that you've found works?
I mean, I think it can be helpful. Another thing that I think, like, this is something people like that I think is a therapeutic technique is like imagining, you know, visualizing yourself doing this. I mean, obviously, this is more kind of often more for like anxiety, but I think it can help when like you have this idea of what perfection looks like. Instead, maybe just picturing yourself like doing the thing, feeling confident and like having a good set, whatever, or, you know, if it's comedy, I guess, you know, like, yeah, however it looks. So I think, yeah, I think like, for me, it makes me think about like what is the goalpost? Like if the goalpost is someone else's, you know, like what you're seeing someone else, then realistically, like you're never going to be able to achieve that, you know? So it's either comparing yourself to someone else or comparing yourself to some idealized version of yourself. And I think like, yeah, we have to like lower our expectations a little bit so we can still see the good. And even if it's not this like idealized version of.
Well, just being able to see the good without it being perfect.
Yeah. When I think of a lot of what you end up fighting against is like whatever voices you internalized in your youth too about like.
Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah.
Whether you were always told like, oh, you did a good job. But then you go out in the world and you're like, oh, my good job is really not that awesome.
Yeah. Definitely.
Or you always get told or you just get ignored or whatever or like emotionally abandoned. So you're like, I don't expect a reaction from anything I do.
Well, and I think too that like it's tricky because, you know, the world almost, you know, you get rewarded for an A plus, you know, everybody looks at an A plus and says, how fucking badass is this? You did it perfect.
Yeah.
You know, we don't congratulate people on a C, which is still passing, you know, like, like there was this spoken word poet who basically he'd made the case where he was just like, I can make a C minus feel like a Congressional Medal of Honor and a fucking A minus feel or a B minus feel like a slap in the face. You know, how dare you give me anything less than your best, you know?
Yeah.
But it's like, I think it's if we were to, you know, hold people up in a way of being like, hey, like you showed up. That's something because I think so often it's just like you showed up and did well. You showed up and did perfect. Every joke landed. Like how many times have you thought that it was a bad set because two jokes missed?
Oh, totally. Totally. Or just like even if like all of those jokes land in one set, the next night you have a different room and those people aren't feeling you. Like it doesn't mean that you're terrible.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, it just depends on the context.
Yeah.
I like what you were saying earlier about like comparing yourself to like past versions. Cause I think that that is like really, I think it's really effective because it allows you to see your own progress.
Yeah. I was going to say, I think the most harmful thing about that is having the goalpost be something that's not related to like your own personal growth. That was like why somebody gave me this tip one time, like when you're going to an open mic, because, you know, sometimes like an open mic, there isn't a lot of good response from the crowd. But they were like, you know, every time you go, you set a personal goal for yourself. So like, I'm going to work on like my inflection, or I'm going to work on my physicality, or I'm going to work on trying to come up with new tags for this thing, or I'm going to work on timing or memorization or whatever, you know. So it's like every time you can leave, even if you got zero, even if you bomb, you can still have a conversation with yourself about what you worked on. So, and it could be something that isn't measured by the necessarily other people's response. It can be something about your own personal pacing or whatever. You know, so I think that's a good one too, is just setting different goals that don't have to do with like perfection, but just like progress. So like, oh, like what's this thing I want? Well, why don't I think I'm perfect? Okay, it's like this, and this. And it's like, well, why don't you just set a goal around like one of those? And then that way it's not a conversation about perfection. It's a conversation about like improvement. But it is hard.
It is hard. And it's like it's you focusing on the part you can control, you know, too, which is like how people respond to you.
Yeah.
You don't get to pick that.
Yeah.
Any part of our lives, really. Right.
Oh, for real.
Yeah. Well, and I think the idea of just like taking smaller chunks and being like, this is the thing I want to work on. This is the thing I want to get better at. It like it allows you to see progress, and you're not basing it off of was everything perfect. It's like, was this part better? Was this part better? And if, you know, if this part's better this time, what do I want to improve on next time?
And I think also like something like comedy is challenging too, because it's all so different. Like you're not going to have the same comedy as anybody else. So it's really challenging to compare two things that are just not. Like it's apples and oranges, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's another reason to like convince yourself like this isn't, it's not useful to compare yourself to other people.
Right.
Yeah.
But especially in comedy. I agree.
So how do you navigate like perfectionism? Like when you realize that you're doing it, like what are the things that you do where you like, where you take a step back or you're like, hey, what's.
Yeah, definitely taking a step back. I'm very lucky to have a best friend who knows me super well. So I can be like, hey, am I like, is this something you can imagine me doing? Like, or just someone else who can like be your sounding board of like, am I totally off track? Like, do I feel uncomfortable because this isn't necessarily for me? Or do I feel uncomfortable just because I'm, you know, I'm stuck in that perfectionistic cycle back in here?
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think like having like an outside perspective is super helpful too, because it's like, I don't feel like I see myself accurately, like as myself, because it's just like, you know, I'm going to be hypercritical, but like being able to ask somebody who was there, ask somebody who saw it, you know, hey, how was that? It allows you to be less critical because it's like, you know, you missed a joke, but everybody in the audience has no idea.
Yeah.
I think about like something about how like how it could hold you back from trying something that you wanted to try. Like, do you feel like it held you back from trying comedy when you first wanted to start?
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. Cause it was something I'd wanted to try like forever. And I just started like last year at age 45. Mm-hmm. So
I like that.
You know, it definitely, I think the thing that still gets me is I can get stuck in like the regret cycle of not trying things sooner.
Yeah, no, I do that one with comedy sometimes like, too when I see young people.
Yeah.
I wish I would have started when I was
Know, and it's like, I feel like so proud of like people I see when they're like in their 20s and their 20s. I'm like, your brain's not even grown and you're out here trying shit.
You're
right?
Just sharing
like,
your thoughts.
You're amazing.
Yeah. Barely been through anything. I mean, not
No, but like I could never have done that in my 20s. I was just way too like crippled by it.
Same. Yeah. I can relate to that too. But I do think there's something cool about pursuing things like, well, one, just pursuing things that you thought you never could do. There's a lot of growth involved in that.
Yeah.
Even though it's still kind of painful, like, because I can relate to that, you know. But I think, I forgot what I was going to say. But
no, you're good. You're good. the thing that I did want to add to your thing is just like that regret feeling of, you know, like, I wish I would have done this sooner. I wish I would have done this sooner. Yeah. Wish I would have done this 10 years ago. Something that I'd read in a book was just like, well, just be grateful you're not starting 10 years from now.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's like, I feel like that is such a good perspective because like, I'm very much like, you know, in the headspace of like, I wish I would have started this sooner. Or like of all the regrets of like how this could have gone. And it's just like, you're starting now. You're doing the thing now. And like, that's, it's scary, you know, it's scary. It's vulnerable. Trying new things is vulnerable. Mm-hmm. Trying new things where you have to be seen while trying new things is very vulnerable.
Yes. Like, practicing your set in front of the mirror, you can only get so much out of like, what comedy's supposed to be.
I one time heard somebody say that like that's part of why stand-up is so terrifying, is because like if you were learning how to like play an instrument or anything else, you would wait until you were decent and then you would go try it. But with comedy, the only way to find out if you're good is to go bomb in front of people, you know what I mean? So it's like, and even when you are good, you still, with a new joke, sometimes it's not funny in the way that you want it to be, and you still bomb, you know what I mean?
Yep.
So it's just like, it's tough.
I think like once you decide like whose reaction do you care about versus can I make everybody in this room laugh, like, like you, it's like you gotta like skinny the window down to what you can actually matters to you about it.
Well, and I think, too, is, you know, like if you can like narrow your focus, something I heard really early on in comedy, which I really like appreciated, was like you only have to win 60% of the room. And then the other 40 will come along. So it's like if you're looking at it as did everybody laugh at every joke, you're going to think you fell short. But like by getting 60, you get 65, 70, you know, and you can build it up. So I think it's a better barometer of like whether or not something successful is, you know, like being able to gain traction.
Well, and I think also the idea that like that thinking about the perfect version of it prevents you from starting is like a good reminder that like it's not a useful tool, right? Like you're like, well, if I would have continued to feed into this idea of needing to be perfect, I never would have tried this thing. So like it really makes it clear that like it's not a good way to approach things. I mean, not that we're doing it because we think it's a good way. We're doing it because we think we have. Yeah, it's not. Yeah, you're not like, this is the best way to do it. But I mean, even though it is the best way, but you know
what I mean? It's not a competition.
But but I think just really being realistic with yourself, like, okay, yes, I feel like I need to do this perfectly, but like if I'm so paralyzed from that feeling that I'm not doing the thing that I really want to do, then like maybe this isn't a useful way to think about it, even though you still have to like actively fight it all the time. But at least you have that reminder of like, this is the reason I started doing this is because I decided to accept to not be perfect, because who's perfect is something the first time they do it, you know?
Definitely.
Seeing that, like seeing that like you're protecting yourself by not trying it, and then seeing like, oh, what is it? Like, what is it that I think is going to happen to me if I try it? Like, and diffusing the danger that's in your brain and realizing like, where does that come from? Probably comes from childhood. Probably comes from somewhere else. Probably comes from middle school.
You know,
but like
the voices of all the people in our lives that we just carry with us now.
Haunt us.
Awesome. Well, let's get haunted by our voices. We're going to take a real quick break and we'll be right back with the smoke break. And welcome back to the smoke break. I'm your host, your old pal Zane, here with Zoe Schwartz.
Hello.
Lori Van Diemen.
Hello.
So I am trying to pass the lip ring that I swallowed, but while we do that, let's talk about hopelessness. I hope it comes out and everything's fine. It's surgical steel.
Oh my God. It's only been a few minutes. You have to wait a while.
I'm very anxious.
I hope you have a fast metabolism.
It's super fast. Thanks, Red Bull. So, hopelessness. a quote that I actually read recently about hopelessness that I really, really appreciated was, hopelessness doesn't come from suffering. Hopelessness comes from suffering we feel like we can't control. And I feel like that really fucking landed for me, because it's like anytime I have been hopeless, it's because I felt like I couldn't play any part in changing or making things better or, you know.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Yeah. Does that connect with anybody?
Oh, definitely. I mean, you think about, for me, like that kind of hopelessness, I think comes with like relationship regrets where it's like, you know, I misplayed something in a relationship. Something's totally my fault. Someone cuts me off.
Sure.
And you don't have anywhere to take your regret or your apology or and your attempts to make it better are not welcome. Like that is that kind of thing feels, I feel that sense of hopelessness.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's dependent on other people and like really all you can do is like make your own moves and like try to do things better. But like, you can definitely get hopeless in being like, oh, well, maybe, you know, maybe there's some kind of role I can play in this world to change it and make it better. It's like, you can change you and make you better. But outside of that, like, I wouldn't hope for it. Good way to waste time.
I was just thinking about how, like, I was raised by a very, like, negative dad. I mean, I had a mom, too, who wasn't as bad, but my dad is very negative. And I was just thinking about how, like, we can get in, like, a really, like, I don't know. I think we've talked about it before as like I can't remember what it, but just when you're constantly thinking about the negative side of things, you know, and I think like hopelessness kind of comes from perspective, I think, to a certain extent, right? Like, because, obviously there are certain things that are really challenging, but I don't know if we ever know if anything is completely hopeless. I mean, obviously, like, I'm not going to learn how to fly. Like, that's probably
not with that fucking attitude. Jesus. Come on.
That's something I've always wanted to do, but,
keep hoping.
But yeah, I don't know. I just think, I think it's hard. It's hard not to be hopeless sometimes, especially because we live in a world that is kind of depressing too. Mm-hmm. And so I think,
it doesn't exactly inspire hope sometimes. And I think that, like, I don't know. A lot of the times when like I'm feeling hopeless, I think, you know, and I think you'd actually brought this up, but it's like, who's benefiting from me being hopeless?
Right.
You know, like what are all the systems in play to make us so exhausted and like feel like we can't change things?
Yeah.
So that way we just don't try.
Yeah. Like it automatically keeps you like reinforcing the status quo of like, you know, we're in jobs that we hate with like just to make enough of the money to like barely pay your rent and do the things you need to do. And then like, you know, who has time to fight the system?
Exactly.
When they're exhausted and depressed.
So when you feel yourself getting hopeless, like where do you find a sense of hope? Where do you kind of like reignite that in yourself?
Oh, I have to really slow down and be in a moment. Like, and I have to think about, like, but one, having like, what power do I actually have in this situation?
Sure.
Like, can I say fuck it and take a hooky day and like take care of myself? Or, you know, or I know like there are things like my relationships with people in my community. Is there somebody who needs something that I can help out? Like, is there some small thing I can do to make it feel like I'm not just a cog in this depressing machine?
Sure. So like when you're not feeling good, you try to like, you know, how can I make somebody else feel better?
Yeah.
And that in turn kind of makes you feel a little bit better.
And then also like the self-care, like, and not just like taking a nice bath or whatever, but like really being like, where is this coming from? Yeah. Like, what is this feeling connected to? I've done a lot of brain spotting in the past in my therapy. Which
I don't think I've heard about
that. It's like an eye movement therapy.
Okay.
But rather than like moving your eyes as you're working, you're just focusing on one spot and letting the intensity of a feeling like move up and down. And like your brain starts kind of pinning the associations and the memories that are attached to that feeling. Mm. And even if you don't really, you can't put words to it or whatever, it helps you kind of reprocess.
Is it kind of like EMDR?
Yeah. It's very, very similar to EMDR.
I was gonna say, it sounds like EMDR.
That's like just building like different pathways and stuff and like associations.
I think, I don't totally understand how it works, but it's like basically, like what you said, like it
even
kind of
practitioners
files,
will be like, they we don't really know how it works.
Exactly. Yeah. It files just away the emotional connection in a way, or like it files away the memory in a way that the emotional like you don't have the same like going back right to that place every time you think about it.
Yeah, it makes you way less reactive. Like you can notice the feeling and sit with it and be like, oh no, like I'm feeling this now. Is it really connected to this situation or am I pulling from somewhere else? Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. Like, yeah. So categorize it better almost, or enhances perspective a little bit.
Yeah. And I think so many people who have like PTSD or whatever can then, it's helpful because then you're realizing like, oh, I'm feeling this way, but there's nothing in this moment that's dangerous. Mm. You know, there's nothing in this moment. It's just reminding me somehow of the actual dangerous thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so you can be less reactive and more there
in the moment
with your power, with your ability to do things different, et cetera.
Yeah. I like that. I really appreciate that perspective. And speaking of perspective, that was a word I heard you bring up a couple times. And I think that like perspective is kind of like what can lead to hopelessness. You know, it's just like, do you view this as an insurmountable task or like, you know, or do you see it as something that's possible?
Yeah.
Because like the way that you look at something is going to allow you to continue to, you know, pursue it in any fashion.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I think, you know, since things that happened in November that don't need to be talked about.
Sure,
like there's a like a landslide of hopelessness because it's like, okay, the next 4 years are going to be really, really difficult and more dangerous for a lot of people.
Sure.
And it's like that, the impendingness of that feels very hopeless.
Yeah.
It feels really awful. And so it's like, what do you do?
Yeah. Well, you know, honestly, what's the thing you said about like going and helping somebody else when you feel hopeless, I feel like applies to this now. Like how can we, what can we do? Like how can we act on the things that we can control, you know, I think, and helping others I think is really, and then also makes me think about like one of the most time, like the most depressed I ever was in my life at one point, which is, you know, hopelessness is a part of depression a lot of the time too, is that I had a therapist that like was the first time I ever like didn't need like serious volunteering. Like, well, I volunteered before, but it was like a really, and I did, I started volunteering, and it was, because it was like, I didn't feel like I had control over what was making my life miserable. It was like, I felt very paralyzed by it, but just by starting that, like I then, and then it literally ended up like funneling into what I do now. Cause I volunteered at a, like a domestic violence resource place on the crisis line. And then I ended up getting hired there. And then I was like, oh, I think I want to be a social worker, you know? But so, I mean, not only did it like take me to a, you know, a realization of who I wanted or what I wanted to do in the world. But I do really think that when you feel like there's nothing you can do to change your circumstance, I really do think helping others is really like the best, one of the best things you can do, because at least you feel effective, right? Like it's like, yes, I don't feel like I can do anything to change this, but I can do something to brighten someone else's day or to support someone else who's in a position, not, you know, not as a privileged position as me. So I think now like that might be one of the best things we can do is just show up for each other.
Yeah.
You know, check on your friends.
I totally
get together with your friends. Yeah. Feed them, whatever.
Feed them lip rings, whatever. this is Zoe's fault. She put it in my muffin. That's strange. Okay. So I was going to say I can do this. Focusing on the things that you can control, because it's like, I feel like there's so many things that are out of our control. But like just saying like, okay, if I made somebody a meal today, like what is inside this small circle of like, I can make this better for you. You know, I've seen like a lot of folks just, you know, because what's happening in the world and just like the people who are going to be affected. Like I've seen people gather around and support them in ways that like maybe they weren't supported before. And it's a bummer that that wasn't the case before, but it's really cool to see it now and people understanding like this is, I can't fix this. I can't fix fucking what the laws are going to be made. But if I can gather some money to help you with a surgery or whatever, like that's where we need to be. We have to like look to each other and be like, how can we build each other up? Because it's all going to be real divided and real kind of weird for a little bit. And that's that sucks. But like, I don't think that it's cause for hopelessness. I think that it's cause for maybe caution, alarm, you know, like be aware that like things, you know, will likely get more difficult. But like, it doesn't mean that it's going to be so hard that we can't get through it.
Yeah. My best friend the other day, she's like, well, we're not living still in a society where people can just be beheaded publicly whenever someone feels like it. She's like, there have been worse. There have been worse rulers. I'm like, that's a really extreme
Yeah, you're like, I don't
example,
know that you even had to go that extreme.
But it kind of feels a little bit better now. But I wanted to plug into what you were saying, Zane, about just like the community care piece. And I think we were chatting a little bit about depression before the show. And I think, and this is something I heard on a podcast that changed the depression and hopelessness game for me, was that the despair and the grief and the hopelessness that you feel is, that's like the gap between the way the world is and the way that you could see that it could be, which means like your depression can be kind of a tool. So like you see, like the world I can't, that I want it to be, is one where I'm feeding people or helping, you know, that you're
contributing
incrementally in some small way, making it a little bit closer to what you want it to be.
I really like that you brought that up. Like one of my best friends now just kind of like has a saying of like, what's the world that I want to live in? Like, oh, this isn't the world I want to live in. And how do I get this world closer to that? And I think like oftentimes we look at what the world isn't and we're just like, well, the gap is so large. Like, why even try?
Yeah.
And
like, it's just why bother? Like,
but the problem is that everybody says, why bother?
Yes.
And that's exactly why we should fucking bother. You know?
Yeah. No, totally.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, and it makes me think about like something I read when I was in school about like, about hope and how like we have to, like, you know, cause like when people are talking about like abolishing the police or whatever, it was like, well, you know, what about this? What are we going to do with these people? What, you know, it was all the potential like negative outcomes. And they were kind of saying like, yes, of course we're going to have to like address all of that if we actually go through with this.
Sure.
But like being able to imagine a world where it is completely different is part of that. And so even though there could be like, I can see how that can produce hopelessness, obviously, like seeing this future and then seeing the distance between there. But I think also, we, in order to be able to imagine something that we don't understand, we have to think outside of the boxes that we live in. So I think like in that way, it was kind of like, okay, so there is, it is useful to fantasize about something that feels impossible in that way, because we need that vision in order to be able to think that it's possible. Cause like in that example of like abolishing the police, people, like they're thinking about it in the context of the world that we live in now. Like we read this, it was like I had to read it from one of my classes and it was like a story that someone had written, but they were like in a different world where there were like no, like there had never been police and there never been this, and it was like they were, it was relating to like someone had murdered someone and it was like the morality around that and how they dealt with it, and it was really fascinating because it was like, wait, what's going on here? But then it was also like, well, imagine if we never thought of crime and punishment the way that we think about that, you know, what if we thought it was more kind of like from a restorative justice perspective, but like from a culture that all like just had that from the beginning,
just built in.
Yeah, and it was a real, and it was like, this isn't real, this is a fantasy, but it was like, this is useful because we can see how we are still thinking within the constraints of the way that we live now, trying to understand how it could change, and part of that is making it seem impossible. So like, even if it isn't in our lifetime, the vision is still valuable. So I thought that was kind of, I mean, it's a little deep, but
I really like that you said that. I started I want to say reading a book. I do audiobooks.
I heard somebody say
it counts
the other
as reading
day,
librarian says so.
I heard someone say
librarian approved.
They were taking in a book or something like that. They like used like a frame of, and I was like, oh, they're listening to audio.
Don't bullshit me, motherfucker.
But it was just like a funny, like super, they're like, I'm taking in this book. And I was like, wait a minute, did you just say taking in this book?
It's either reading or listening. But the book was called Loving Corrections. And it was from this black queer femme who, you know, just works in like abolitionist work and stuff like that. And she said that a lot of her inspiration and hope that she gained was from sci-fi.
Yeah.
Because it creates this fantasy world where you can start thinking outside of like, well, how would we navigate this? It's like, it can be so far separated from the world that we live in that you can actually just imagine a world where it's different. And I think that's really effective. It doesn't have to be a true story to be a good framework, you know what I mean? Like the doors from fucking Star Trek, like
I was about to say, like Star Trek is one of those.
Exactly,
that's why it's super popular.
It like, started off as it started off as a fantasy, and then we're like, why don't we have fucking doors that do that? That's sweet.
And I bet all the doors in Elon Musk's house open like that. He's all
except there's actually like people back there pulling him. He like thinks they're opening
their children.
Their children. Be quiet. Daddy Musk doesn't hear you.
Yeah, exactly.
Daddy Musk.
I hate that. I'm going to try and collect myself during
like
this break.
Daddy Musk. Sorry.
Oh, God. My perfume is here. Zoe's going to get that to me, and we're going to take a real quick break. And welcome back to the Smoke Break. I'm your host, Daddy Musk. Here is Zoe Schwartz. And Lori Van Diemen. Those laughs are confirmation that they're here. So the last thing we were going to talk about was conflict resolution.
You remembered.
I did. That's because Zoe came up with a nice little mind palace.
We did.
You did. So yeah, I think that conflict, I almost forgot it right there. Conflict resolution, super important. You're good. Super important, but not always the easiest to do in the moment, I feel like. I feel like oftentimes I walk away from a situation knowing I could have handled it better and didn't, and then I have the regret and like anger at myself of being like, you shouldn't have said that. You shouldn't have done that. And it's there's so much perspective you get in hindsight that like you have to use to be like, okay, so maybe telling my best friend to go fuck themselves forever wasn't the move, you know? And then you just don't do that in the future, you know? But like, I think conflict resolution, honestly, in general, is a lot of like saying the wrong thing till you figure out what the right thing is.
Yeah, you have to have permission you have to give yourself permission, I guess, to fuck it up. You have to fuck it up before you can get it right.
Absolutely.
It also makes me think about how like often when we're in conflict, we are triggered, and it's really hard. It's literally like the part of your brain that thinks logically gets shut off when you're triggered. So I think part of conflict resolution can often be like taking a break in the heat of the conflict to have the space to be able to resolve and have think logically. So I think that's a fundamental part of what's hard about conflict resolution, is that if you're triggered, if you're upset, your brain is not helping you think logically. And you go back to all those old places, right? Often there's like a old story that's coming in that's telling you it's happening again or whatever, you know? So getting regulated, I think, is a big part of being able have conflict resolution.
I think stepping away just for like a second, because it's like I struggle with bipolar. That's my vice, I guess. But
it's my bag.
Yeah, you know, it's my burden to carry. But yeah, like it's just a lot of like explosive emotions, a lot of like paranoia and stuff like that, and like trying to resolve a conflict when you're like exploding at somebody isn't exactly the time. And there's I swear to God, every fucking time I blow up, I come back later and I'm like, that was unnecessary and I'm really sorry. But in the moment, like, that's not something I could do. I had a conflict with somebody the other day, and you know, like my friend was trying to like resolve it and was just like, hey, we can all just get together and talk. And I was just like, we all got into the room and I was like, I don't think I can fucking do this right now. And it's like, I'm very much a person who can talk through stuff, so I know, or like tries to talk through stuff, and it's like, if I know that I can't talk through it in this moment, I have to be able to honor that within myself and be like, okay, maybe this just needs a little bit more time.
Yeah I do think that's a big part of it, is being able to be honest with yourself about whether you're actually in the place to have a conversation. Like if you're feeling super defensive,
yeah
that's a huge one.
How so?
I'm a freezer.
I'm a refrigerator.
I don't experience a lot of like direct conflict and fighting with people, because I shut it down here, which is not good either, because then it leads to all kinds of resentment and all that kind of stuff. But I have a child.
There you go.
And when you are the parent, you are the regulator, because that kid, their brain is not at a point where like there's any kind of way to, and what you're saying, like taking a break, stepping back, like it used to be like in a punishment household, it's like go sit in the corner or whatever. But you can do that in a constructive way.
Absolutely,
notice like you're really emotional right now and it's hard for you to like say anything to me that's nice, or like
how old is your, take a break. Is your kid?
He's 11 now, but when he was littler is when this kind of stuff. Now we can like have conversations, because he's like more emotionally aware than I was at his age, which is like
And that's
that means you did a good job.
Yeah.
But it's terrifying because I'm like, I don't know how, like, I've never seen this done.
Yeah. You're like, where did this kid come from?
Like, well, and it's like, how do we teach something we were never taught?
Yeah. That's the hard
because
part
it's like,
parent.
You know, I feel like oftentimes it's just like, I have a problem with you and it's causing me pain. And to separate from the pain, I have to separate from you. And I feel like that's often the answer. And I feel like in certain situations, that's definitely helpful. I think that that's definitely like the best answer. But I think other times, like, because it's the answer so often, we just go straight to it of just like, this is too painful. Like, I, you know, I've had to separate from friends because I've gotten activated and just been like, I can't think about this, you know, but I think the times that I've worked through it, it's strengthened relationships and friendships so much because there's that you both get that understanding of the willingness of like trying to understand each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. And being able to come back together after a blow up and both be able to still like give each other enough grace to like explain each other, you know, explain yourself to the other person and listen and really actually be able to listen to what they have to say without getting defensive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, yeah, there's a lot of growth involved in being able to have a conflict with someone and then come to a place where you can both hear one another and and apologize for the impact and without feeling like you're like all that. It feels so good when you successfully do that with someone, especially when it gets heated like in the moment, you know. But yeah, when you're able to do, and then it brings you closer together because it's like, oh, now we have tools to be able to navigate conflict in the future. And it makes me think about how like sometimes you see these things like, oh, healthy relationships, like you shouldn't always be in, I mean, obviously you shouldn't always be in conflict. Sure. That's not a good sign. Yeah. But I think we underestimate the power of conflict and like how much you can learn through having a problem with someone and sorting through it. Because a lot of people, like you were saying, a lot of people avoid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And like, obviously that's learned, you know, but but it prevents you from growing. And then I've seen those couples where it's like they never talk about it. And then it's like there's just so much distance that grows between you like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, when you know how someone behaves in conflict, like that totally affects like how much trust are you able to have in them if you know they handle conflict well.
Yeah. I really like that you said that because it's like I don't really know where I stand with a friend until we've had a conflict, you know? Because it's just like obviously everybody's cool as long as everybody's cool, you know, but it's like what happens when I say the wrong thing, you know, what happens when I show up late, what happens when, you know, like what are the things that like we can get through? Something that like I always thought was really cool is like a team building exercise, but just like a way to bring people together is like give them a common conflict to like solve together. Like, for example, video games, like if I beat a game with somebody, I feel closer to that person because we got through this fucking struggle of like we got through this thing together. So it's like, I feel like conflict, you know, as often as it does cause separation, it can also cause, you know, healing and growing together.
I think so too. Yeah. No, you definitely feel closer to someone after you have a conflict and then you sort through it. Cause it's kind of also like there's more safety in the relationship now because you know, like you said, if you know someone, even if they don't handle conflict well, but if you know that you are able to together handle conflict, you know, like, it gives a lot, there's more space to have hard conversations because you know there is a place of resolution for both of you where sometimes people won't want to have hard conversations because they're worried like the conversation will be the ending of the relationship. And it's like, well, eventually it's going to end if you don't talk about all the stuff.
Yeah. I like that. No, I really
That is for real. I can't tell you how many times I've seen friends who are like in relationships, like romantic or otherwise, and they're like so afraid to talk to this person about the problem that they're having. And it's like, oh, if you don't do it, like you are doomed.
Yeah, it's not going to get better.
Like, this is not going to go away.
Silent resentment doesn't just go away.
It's funny. Everybody thinks it'll work.
Yeah, yeah. Honestly. Like, but I mean, I think that like the conversations that you have, you know, it's I think that like oftentimes with conflicts, we think that like somebody who has harmed us has intentionally harmed us.
Right.
You know, I think like a negative impact is assumed with a negative intention. And I think that like oftentimes when you can just understand that like people are trying to survive, people are, you know, something I heard was like, we're all just suffering and trying not to suffer. Like once you understand that like most people are coming from, you know, maybe even like, you know, survival instincts and stuff like that. Like the more you understand that and the more you can communicate that with each other of like, you know, yes, I yelled, but like it was because I felt like I wasn't safe and I felt like this was going to happen forever. And I felt like then there's more understanding of, just like people in, you know, the humanity in us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
It makes me think about like like just being comfortable with the idea that you could be wrong or that you could be hurtful. Yes. Like I think for a lot of people, that's so hard. It's like, well, if I'm hurtful, then I'm a bad friend. And it's like, no, you probably just were thinking differently than I was, or, you know, you didn't see what was happening, or you were coming from your own perspective, you know? So I think just the skill of being able to be say like, I'm sorry, that wasn't helpful. Or like, I'm sorry that the thing I said felt that way for you, even
destructive,
though
impactful.
But I didn't, even though like I, you know, cause I think a lot of people feel like if you apologize, it means you're saying, yes, I meant to do that, you know? So I think there's a lot of benefit and or a lot of growth involved in being able to be like, you know what? I did come across that way. Or, oh, I wasn't being as thoughtful, but I'm still a good person and I'm still willing to hear how I can do better, you know?
Yeah.
So I think,
yeah. And the risk in that situation is like, you know, you come forward and say, here's how I was thinking about it. I see how this impacted you now. I'm, you know, I'm very sorry for that. And then the person can't reciprocate that energy. Like it hurts.
Yeah,
it does.
But it's way better than just sitting there and letting things be.
No, and
at least you get an endpoint.
I was going to say that also kind of like helps you decide if someone's a safe friend to have, because I think you do have to have a certain level of like self-reflectiveness in order to be a healthy friend or partner. And so I think like if someone isn't able to do that, it kind of shows you what boundaries you need to have with them in the future, right?
Yeah,
like
definitely.
How close can I let this person to me if they're not able to hear hard things about themselves and and not assume that that means I hate them or that they're the wrong, always wrong, or that I didn't do anything wrong, you know? That
I always feel like that's just such a, just like a stopper for conflict is just like, I'm a bad person. I guess I just fucking suck. Yeah. And it's just like, we can't get anywhere with this because like you're basing this off of like your personality, which is like this thing that you can't really change and let instead of being like, this action sucked. Action sucked. You don't suck. You did the action, but like you don't suck as a person because of that action. I feel like there's so often like people are afraid to admit when they're wrong because they think that they're admitting that they're wrong. And it's like, that's not what we're asking. We're asking you to acknowledge this part of it.
This really ties back into the idea of perfection, right? Because not exactly in the way that we were talking about it, but just the idea that like, if you fuck up, then you're doomed to be, and there's no point in trying. And it's like, oh, there's so much beauty in people that like know their flaws. You know what I mean? Like, I love a friend that you can be like, God, you fucking do this annoying thing. And then we can like laugh about it. And then I'm like, I know I do that annoying thing too. You know, it's like, we're both pleasantly flawed. And at least I can admit that I'm like, I have a friend who's really bossy and I like interrupt people all the time. And so we have like a nickname for each other. I call her Bossy Extraordinaire and she calls me Interrupter Extraordinaire. Anyway, but and so like we'll get in like really dumb fights, but we're both like, you're right, I'm so fucking like annoying, like I'm sorry I did that, you know? It's very endearing to be able to be like, I know
what you do.
I know how I'm annoying
you anyway.
My
best friend moves furniture all the time. Like whenever anything is going on in her life, she just moves all the furniture.
We used to live together.
So I'd come home and the house is like completely changed. And I'm like, what's happening?
Yeah, what's going on, friend?
Like, what do you need to talk about?
Let's check in real quick.
And it's adorable. You like, you moved all my shit and I can't find anything. Can we talk about what's really going on with you?
I think that like, I don't know, conflict resolution is one of those things that like, I've also had experiences where like, I've been hopeful to resolve like a conflict with a person and realize that that person isn't somebody that I can resolve conflict with. It doesn't mean that like conflicts can't be resolved. And a lot of me wanted to just give up because I was like, most people, most situations I can talk things through. But because that situation with this person was so difficult, I was like, well, maybe it's all impossible. But it's like, you can't, you have to just understand that like that conflict resolution can really only happen if both sides are willing to A, admit when they're wrong, and B, listen to the other person. Like those, for me, those are the two biggest ones. Like if you can say like, I was wrong in this situation and I'm listening to how I impacted you, like that is where there's room for growth. But there are going to be people who are just like, no, you're wrong, blah, 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 you know? And it's like, if they've already decided, like you can't undo that.
And you know, they might come, like they might eventually, like they might grow and realize like, oh, I didn't handle that the way I wish I had. Like sometimes people come back and you get a letter from their 12-step group or whatever.
Absolutely.
Sometimes you don't, and like learning how to like make peace with your part of it and let go. Super adult skill.
Like an ex-boyfriend that cheated on you sends you $100 through Cash App 4 years later.
I wish that would happen.
Oh no, it was more annoying than I like wished he wouldn't have. I was like, oh, you think that's gonna fix it? And then he was like, there's more where that comes from. And then after I told him what I thought of him, there wasn't more where that came from. I was like, oh, so
this would be worth $100 to say.
Because I knew he was the, I was like, this is about you. This is not about you actually apologizing to me. This is about you wanting to feel like a better person. You know what I mean? Like from the beginning, it felt like that.
Well, and I mean,
not to make it about me or anything.
And that one time 4 years ago. Well, I mean, I think that, like, you know,
seven, nine.
Who's counting, right? But yeah, I think that, like, with conflict resolution, I think it's being persistent in the sense of knowing that it can be possible, but also being willing to, like, let go at the same time and know when it's not, you know? So,
and yeah, knowing it's safe to be wrong with this person too, I think is a big part of that.
Definitely. Well, Lori, thank you so much for joining
this.
This
is such a pleasure.
It was fun.
You guys are treats.
Couple of treats.
You're a treat.
You're a peach.
Okay, Dan.
Ah, best episode ever. I've been your host, Daddy Musk, here with Zoe Schwartz.
Hi.
Lori Van Diemen.
Bye.
Later, players.
Daddy Musk.